All righty, hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Coming up an hour from now, former NFL general manager Doug Whaley will join us. We'll try to see if the Steelers do look to trade T.J. Watt, what the return would be for teams that are interested and what they would have to give up to the Pittsburgh Steelers in order to secure the services of T.J. Watt, one of the better NFL players in the entire league, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So we will chat it up with Doug Whaley, throw around the football, do a bunch of NFL topics with him an hour from now. It is a Tuesday on the show, so Stu has a bunch of questions for me. I will either say it's an overreaction or a proper reaction in the way that Stu words it. So let's get to a little overreaction, proper reaction right now.
Another football week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Help! Help! Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
All righty, Stu, what do we got cooking today, my pal?
All right, so yesterday we talked a lot about the future of T.J. Watt with the Steelers. Well, according to Adam Schefter, multiple teams over the last few weeks are discussing whether or not they could trade for the all-pro edge rusher. Overreaction or proper reaction, if T.J. Watt gets traded this offseason, the Steelers will get at least two first-round picks and a day-two pick.
You would think so with some of the players we've seen that have been traded for multiple first-round picks. He is 30 years old, though. He turns 31 in this season, and you got to pay him a crazy contract. That probably is $40 million, $41 million a year. I think you definitely get a first-round pick and then another pick. I don't necessarily know if it's another first-round pick. It's probably a day-two pick. I did see Andrew Filippone say if the Eagles wanted him, it would be a first-round pick and Nolan Smith. So that's essentially two first-round picks. So there's ways to be creative about it. I think a one and a three, somewhere like that, maybe a one and a three with conditions to make it a one and a two. Could you see a contender like a Buffalo? If you want to throw out there some of these other teams, you know, maybe they adopt the less need strategy and say F them picks. Could you maybe then say, okay, I'm good to give 2-1, sure. But to get 2-1s and a day two pick, even for a player like T.J. Watt, I think that's a little too rich to sit here and say that it's definitely a guarantee. Because remember, in a weird way, if he does become available, the market's going to be limited. Because if he's leaving the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Steelers could say, hey, we're going to trade you wherever and get the most back for you. That's their right. But reality, they'll probably would work with him. And T.J. Watt also has to be willing to sign a contract extension there. So he does have leverage. And if he's not given that team that's going to trade for him his word that he'll sign a contract extension there, then are you going to go give up a king's ransom? Probably not. So you're probably thinking he would go to an actual contender. Maybe the Steelers say, we don't want to trade you in the AFC. So I do think there would be a lot working against the Steelers here, where they'll still get something rich in return, but I don't think it's going to be the godfather offer of two first-round picks like you're saying, and then a day-two pick as well. So I'm going to say that is a little bit of an overreaction.
All right, Broncos cornerback Patrick Surtain had an incredible season in 2024, being named Defensive Player of the Year and helping the Broncos reach the playoffs, which was a surprise to many. Well, now Surtain has set his sight on higher goals, saying, quote, there's always something out there to do better. Why not get another one? Why not get more all pros? But I think the main goal is to win the Super Bowl at the end of the day. That's why I played a game, is to win. I think that's the end goal for me. End of quote.
Let me tell you, I know a lot of what he just said. Most players should say that. Pat Surtain, who's one of my favorite players in the NFL, and I love when we got a chance to talk to him in the Super Bowl. He is one of the more likable players in the NFL too. First off, he's a stud. You know there's going to be nothing going wrong off the field with Pat Surtain. And he is a great leader for that organization, or as they would say in hockey, even though this isn't hockey, organization. I'm a huge fan of Patrick Surtain. Champ Bailey once told me he expects Pat Surtain to accomplish everything that he did and then some. That's how highly he thinks of Pat Surtain. So look at the way that Pat Surtain has handled some things, and then Sauce Gardner, who it seems as if Sauce Gardner is fighting on social media with fans every 3 seconds. look at the maturity of Pat Surtain and what he's been able to do in his career. And then Sauce Gardner's been a very good player, probably the second best cornerback in the NFL. But look at some of the immaturity that he's displaying. It feels like Pat Surtain is a 15-year veteran already, as it feels as if Sauce Gardner is acting and behaving like a rookie at times. But anyway, you continue.
Overreaction or proper reaction, the Denver Broncos will reach an AFC championship game within the next three seasons.
They had a remarkable season. They got smacked in the playoffs by the Buffalo Bills after taking an early lead in that game. I like what I saw from Bo Nix. Sean Payton's a heck of a coach. They made some good moves defensively this offseason, and they already had a good defense to begin with. I can't sit there and say, though, that they're going to be close in the next three seasons. So you would need one of, or it would be Kansas City, Buffalo, and the Ravens. For the next 3 years, they're probably still going to dominate the AFC. Can the Texans take that next step? I still put the Texans in front of the Broncos. What happens with the future of the Chargers as well? So there's a lot of teams there, and only two teams obviously could get to the AFC championship game. So for now, in the next three seasons, the Broncos will reach the AFC championship game. Even though they have a lot going well for them, I'm going to say that's an overreaction.
Right over the weekend, Mike Florio revealed his five head coaches whose seats are the hottest for the upcoming season. Among the names were the typical and unshocking ones, like Mike McDaniel, Brian Daboll, Shane Steichen, and Dave Canales. However, Florio also included first-year Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer. Florio wrote, quote, "He was on exactly zero team shortlist during the last hiring cycle. For the Cowboys, who wanted to have offensive continuity for quarterback Dak Prescott, it was either Schottenheimer or Eagles offensive coordinator, New Saints head coach Kellen Moore. Schottenheimer came cheaper. How cheap? So cheap that there would be no buyout if he's fired after 1 year. If so, Schottenheimer could need to do enough in 2025 to earn employment for 2026.
Florio always has some nugget, let me tell you.
Overreaction or proper reaction, Brian Schottenheimer will be one and done in Dallas.
So he gave you, before he gave you Schottenheimer, McDaniel, Daboll, Shane Steichen, and Dave Canales. You look at other names that could potentially be there. No one in the AFC East. McDermott's on the hot seat. Aaron Glenn just got there. Mike Vrabel just got there. AFC North, you know what I'm surprised isn't on there? No Zach Taylor.
Taylor, yeah.
Now, maybe that's him saying, look how long they kept Marvin Lewis, who never won a playoff game, even though Marvin Lewis did a good job with the Bengals, and Zach Taylor got to a Super Bowl a few years ago. But Taylor, I think, has to be on the hot seat. No Stefanski, by the way, on the hot seat. I would put those two names in front of Schottenheimer just for starters. You know, I would even put Mike Tomlin. Now, I understand the organization may not get rid of him, but just in public pressure, Mike Tomlin's got to be there. AFC South. All those coaches are relatively new. And D'Amico Ryans has been great. You just got Liam Cohen there. We already said Steichen. Callahan now is your number two, and he has Cam Ward. AFC West, no, because Pete Carroll just got there. Andy Reid's great. And Harbaugh and Sean Payton are phenomenal. NFC East, obviously no with Nick Sirianni. Obviously no with Dan Quinn. Daboll, we already talked about, and we're discussing Schottenheimer. NFC North. None of those coaches are on the hot seat with Campbell, with KOC. You also have LaFleur, and they just brought in the offense coordinator for the Lions and Ben Johnson. NFC South, Todd Bowles just got the extension. Raheem Morris could be on the hot seat. I would consider Raheem Morris. Saints just hired a new coach. So that kind of throws them out of it too. But hey, you're talking about one and done here with Schottenheimer. But I don't think Kellen Moore is going to be one and done. NFC West, McVay's not going anywhere. You have the defensive coordinator, McDonald, who came over the Ravens last year, was solid at 10-7. Gannon could be a little bit on the hot seat. And then you look at the 49ers. Shanahan, I don't think he'll get fired if they miss the playoffs, but they were 6-11 last year, so maybe they think that's run its course. Here's the thing. I think this is a misconception with Jerry Jones. Because Jerry Jones is crazy and he's all about drama, but he's usually very patient with his coaches. So this idea that Schottenheimer is going to be one and done, I don't think that's very Jerry Jones-like, even though most people think that is the case. So I'm going to go overreaction there when you ask me Brian Schottenheimer will be done in Dallas.
ESPN's Matt Miller released an early 2026 mock draft, and it had a very interesting pick at the top. He has the Browns picking first overall, and taking Clemson's Cade Klubnik with that pick. The Brownies, of course, took Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders in this past year's draft. Overreaction or proper reaction, if the Browns do get the number one overall pick, they will pass up on drafting a quarterback.
So I'm a mock draft nerd. I read these mock drafts this time of the year. I read the mock drafts right after the NFL draft ends. I always find that amusing how they could give you a mock draft when the draft just ended, how they could already give you the next year's mock draft. I would say in the last month, or especially the last 2 weeks, Cade Klubnik is that first quarterback off the board. So there's high expectations for Clemson. There's high expectations for Cade Klubnik. If the Browns are the number one pick spot, could you trade a bunch of future picks? But how much more time is Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski going to get? So you have Shedeur there. You have Dillon Gabriel there. You got Kenny Pickett there. You got Joe Flacco there. If they have the number one overall pick, that means those quarterbacks sucked. All right? So I don't think if they get the number one overall pick, and also Deshaun Watson, who knows when he's going to come back. And, you know, I hear he's mentoring these young quarterbacks. Get Deshaun Watson away from me. If I'm one of those young quarterbacks, I'm saying the Browns, yeah, listen to what he says and do the opposite. Because look how his career turned out, and look what he ended up doing. So if the Browns do get the number one overall pick this season, they will pass up on drafting a quarterback. I don't think they will, so I'm going to say that's an overreaction.
All right. As we discussed last hour, Arch Manning is taking over as Texas's starting quarterback. And for many, that is the most intriguing college football storyline heading into the season. Well, Paul Feinbaum only added to that when appearing on ESPN's Get Up This Morning.
The absolute roof. I think there's a reasonably good chance that Arch Manning will be sitting on the front row in New York at the Heisman ceremony. That's assuming that his team does what it's supposed to do and compete for not only the SEC, but for the national championship. And I really believe they will. I think Steve Sarkisian, who's one of the most amazing play callers I've ever seen, made a critical mistake late in the year. He was way too loyal to Quinn Ewers, who was banged up and was really ineffective. Had Arch Manning been instituted in the second half of that game, like Nick Saban did a couple of years ago with Tungavailoa, I think there's a reasonably good chance that Texas would have beaten Ohio State and won the national championship. They're very capable of doing it again this year. I believe also that Arch Manning is the best college football quarterback we have seen since Tim Tebow entered the scene in 2006.
So overreaction or proper reaction, for all the hype that Arch Manning is getting, his college career will end up as a disappointment.
I think whenever he declares the NFL draft, he'll be the number one overall pick. I think he will be a Heisman Trophy finalist this year. And I think he'll have Texas right in the mix to go win a national championship. I'm not saying they will definitely win a national championship, but if you're going to be a Heisman Trophy finalist this year, if you're going to have Texas in the mix and you're inevitably going to be the number one overall pick, I think it's tough to say that your college career was a disappointment. The hype is through the roof. The hype is crazy. So some people may view it that way, but I won't. Yeah, he needs to take Texas to the next step, and they've been in the Final Four the last two seasons. But I think he's going to be there for this year and then next year. So I'm not ready to say that with all the hype he's getting, that Arch Manning's college career will end up being a disappointment, but it could be tough to meet some of the bars that people are setting. What Feinbaum just said is crazy to me. You not watch Joe Burrow when he was at LSU, Mr. SEC there? So I look at that, and maybe the bar is being set too high, but I think we're going to look back and say, okay, Arch Manning was a successful college football quarterback. So I'll go a slight overreaction there.
All right, after a somewhat disappointing first year for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, where they missed out on a chance at the playoffs, expectations are high for year two. Gone is quarterback Jalen Milroe, who is now with the Seahawks. He will be replaced by Ty Simpson, who has only attempted 50 passes on the collegiate level. Well, on Get Up This Morning, once again, Paul Feinbaum, he made an interesting claim.
I know exactly what happened last year in Kalen DeBoer's first season, but this team is better. He has a better quarterback. Ty Simpson, you may not have heard of him. Jalen Milroe was great, and he was also ice cold at times. Simpson, I think, is serviceable. He will lead this offense. The defense is the best Alabama has had since about 7 or 8 years ago, and I think Alabama is a legitimate shot at winning the SEC and the national championship.
Overreaction or proper reaction, Alabama is better off with Ty Simpson than Jalen Milroe at quarterback.
I'm actually going to say that's a proper reaction. I think they are better off with Ty Simpson. The ceiling for Jalen Milroe was so high, but the floor was ugly. And there was no middle ground. Jalen Milroe didn't play serviceable football. It was either all that or absolutely nothing. And that ultimately derailed the Alabama season. Up against Georgia, it was sensational. But then you look at games like Oklahoma and Tennessee, he was brutal. So we saw Alabama for years, right? Towards the end of Nick Saban, they got the big quarterback play. But before that, it was predicated off great defense and just kind of having a game manager at the quarterback position. I like the word that Feinbaum used there, serviceable. That's really all that Alabama needs. They don't need a rock star at the quarterback position with the talent that they have. And you have Ryan Williams as well as that wide receiver. You just need to be serviceable. And that's the thing. When you look at someone like Milroe, when he was off, he couldn't just be okay. Like, some guys have bad games, but they find a way to work through it. And they're okay. They don't kill their team. It was either he was great and looked like he'd be Heisman Trophy finalist, looked like he won a national championship, or he was so off where it just derailed that season. So I will agree with Paul Feinbaum there that Alabama's better off this season with Ty Simpson than they were last year with Jalen Milroe at the quarterback position. Proper reaction.
All right, last one here. BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff is reportedly expected to transfer as he is anticipating a 7-game suspension for breaking the school's honor code. Retzlaff was accused of sexually assaulting a woman in November of 2023. That case has since been dropped, but he has admitted to having consensual sex with the accuser, which is against the school's honor code. Overreaction or proper reaction, Jake Retzlaff is capable of leading a Power 4 team to the playoffs.
It was close last year with BYU in the Big 12, so I think he can. The story that's been out there, he was accused of sexual assault, like Stu said, and then the case was dropped, but now he has to leave BYU and he has to transfer for them because of obviously the things that you are not allowed to do at that university that are different than pretty much almost every other university in the country. So if he was, let's say, let me just throw a school out there. If he was at LSU or if he was at Georgia, right, and there was these accusations and they were dropped, he wouldn't be leaving. He would be their quarterback. But because of BYU, he wants to play this year. He doesn't want to serve a 7-game suspension. So he's going to go somewhere else. I think the kid's a good quarterback. And I do think that he could take in a 12-team playoff, a team two, the 12-team playoff. So Jake Retzlaff is capable of leading a Power 4 team to the playoff. I'm going to say that is a proper reaction. But it'll be fascinating to see where he does land. All right, this is Zach Yelp Show on the Infinity Sports Network. If TJ Watt gets traded, where could he be dealt to? We'll discuss some options that CBS Sports have thrown out there next. All righty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Doug Whaley, the former NFL general manager, he is going to stop by coming up in a little over a half hour from now, 35 minutes from now at 5 p.m. Eastern time. I was reading this article on CBS Sports today. Cody Benjamin was the author, and he loves to throw out a lot of lists whenever there is a player that's involved or a coach is involved, and where they could potentially wind up for this upcoming season. So the TJ Watt stuff has been in the news. It's bizarre to me because he is the face of that franchise, especially since Big Ben Roethlisberger has left the Steelers organization and did end up retiring. And we've seen this NFL offseason, right? Myles Garrett, who's the biggest nemesis to TJ Watt, he got a new contract, and it'd be $40 million a year. So TJ Watt is due and is in line for a new deal, and they still have not been able to get a new deal. So yesterday, this was put right back in the forefront yesterday with Adam Schefter's tweet, and it wasn't a TJ Watt's definitely leaving, but he clearly isn't happy that a deal has not got done yet, and this should be one that's very easy. Right, Max Crosby got taken care of. You obviously have Myles Garrett get taken care of. Clearly, Trey Hendrickson is pending, but a lot of people are faulting the Bengals on that. The Cowboys of Micah Parsons. I think Micah Parsons knows the Cowboys playbook and he executes the playbook to a T. So I don't think there's a level of frustration there yet. But clearly with TJ Watt, there's a level of frustration. And I sat there at the Super Bowl this past year and we talked to Myles Garrett. And after we talked to Myles Garrett, I said, TJ Watt should follow suit. Because even though, right, you're in a better spot than where Cleveland is right now as a franchise, the Pittsburgh Steelers are nowhere close to contending to go win a Super Bowl. The Pittsburgh Steelers haven't won a damn playoff game since the 2016 season. So once you found out that Myles Garrett, you know, I guess played an act there, you know, said he wanted to, he lied, he wanted, said he wanted to go win a championship, and this was not about the money, it ended up all being about the money. So when Myles Garrett took that new deal with the Cleveland Browns, I sat there and I said, TJ Watt should do what Myles Garrett didn't do. And that's not only request the trade, but go through with it. So since this is back in the news yesterday, Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports, he put this together. And these are the teams that he thinks would be calling Pittsburgh about Watt in order to get a deal done. And I guess he only wanted to entertain the NFC. Now, I don't know about you, Stu. I think this is more common in different sports. But in the NFL, if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, and if you're trading TJ Watt, yeah, the only teams you probably wouldn't trade him to are Cleveland, are Baltimore, and Cincinnati. I think you wouldn't trade him inside the division. In terms of the conference, if the Buffalo Bills want to give you a crazy offer and top the teams in the NFC, would you have any problems with the Steelers trading him to the Buffalo Bills? Like, let's say he wants to go to a contender. Let's say, well, the Texans wouldn't make sense because they have Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. But let's say the two AFC teams that he'd be willing to get traded to, because you can't say Baltimore, you know they're never going to trade into Baltimore. But if he says, oh, Kansas City and Buffalo, would you be totally against it if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, trade him in the conference to Kansas City or Buffalo?
No, assuming the offer is more than an NFC team. Like, if the offers are the same, let's say,
yeah,
you trade him to the NFC team, but if you're getting an extra fourth-round pick, let's say, then you do it.
Yeah, I would have no problem with it. And I think Omar Khan and Mike Tomlin, who have an incredible amount of job security, I don't know if they wouldn't say this publicly, but if you hooked them up to a lie detector test, do you think this team can win a Super Bowl this year? If they say yes, that's going to come back as a lie. The offensive line is still a question mark. You don't right now have a number two wide receiver. I read something that maybe they're going to end up getting Gabe Davis, who I thought Gabe Davis signed. I did. And he's still out there in Gabe Davis. So we know they got rid of George Pickens. They did make the trade for DK Metcalf. So they still need a number two wide receiver. The running back room, I know they just drafted a youngster. And you know, they got rid of Najee Harris. But you look at that running back room. And I know their other running back, he's solid. A lot of people thought he's better than Najee Harris. Najee Harris, though, has produced 1,000-yard seasons every year he's been in the NFL. So let's see what Jaylen Warren does when there's more food on his plate this year. And Jaylen Warren's been a solid two-way running back. But I wouldn't sit there and say I feel confident with their offensive line. I wouldn't say I feel confident with their running back room. And you look at wide receiver-wise, yeah, they got Robert Woods, but this isn't Robert Woods of 4 or 5 years ago. You know, Freiermuth's good. They got Jonnu Smith, so they're probably going to run a lot of two tight end sets. And also Aaron Rodgers, hasn't been great in 3 years. He wasn't great at the end in Green Bay. Achilles injury first year in New York. And last year, at the end of the season, he was fine. But there was already too much damage done. And defensively, you think they bounce back this year, assuming that TJ Watt's on the team. You know, you have Patrick Queen. The secondary's good with Darius Big Play Slay. You got Joey Porter Jr. Now you got Jalen Ramsey. You still have Cam Hayward there. But this isn't as if you're looking at this team and you're saying, oh my God, they're a contender. So if the Steelers were, let's say, the Buffalo Bills, and let's say they had an incident with the star player, yeah, I probably would not trade TJ Watt inside the AFC because of the fact that I'm a bona fide Super Bowl contender. The Steelers are not a bona fide Super Bowl contender. So I just wouldn't trade him inside the AFC North. But these are the teams that Cody Benjamin have identified that could go make a move for TJ Watt if he does become available. The Detroit Lions. Imagine pairing him up, Aiden Hutchinson and TJ Watt. That would be great. The Green Bay Packers. And you know what? If the Packers go do it, that could elevate them from being a good team to a contender. But how many years do we sit here and we say the Packers are going to make a big move and they don't? You know, don't get me wrong. You know, they made some nice moves last year. But ultimately, you look at that team, I feel like they're always rumored to go get the big, big name, and they don't end up getting the big, big name. The Philadelphia Eagles, I heard Filippone say that with Joe Giglio and Hugh Douglas there on 94 WIP. Would you give up a young player like Nolan Smith in a first-round pick? I guess it's on the table. The Seattle Seahawks, who are looking for a little extra oomph. The Washington Commanders, they're right in there with the quarterback that's on a rookie contract. So it's definitely feasible. Out of those teams, who do you think needs T.J. Watt the most? Lions, this is what Cody Benjamin threw out there. Lions, Packers, Eagles, Seahawks, and Commanders. Stu, who would you say needs T.J. Watt out of those five teams the most if he did become available via trade?
I'd say the Seahawks. I feel like the Seahawks are like a decent team with a lot of question marks. If you add T.J. Watt to that team, they, at least in my opinion, they're probably, I would almost guarantee they're a playoff team.
And Nico, where would you go there?
I'm going to go with the Packers. I like what you said, where they're a good team right now, but if you give them someone like T.J. Watt, I think that puts them in the contender category.
You look at that team with T.J. Watt, you'd have Jordan Love as your quarterback, Josh Jacobs as your running back. They just drafted a wide receiver in the first round for the first time since 2002. So your receiving core is Jaden Reed, Matthew Golden, Romeo Doubs. We'll see what happens with the health of Christian Watson. You still got Dontavian Wicks there. Defensively, Kenny Clark is a really good underrated football player. You have Rashawn Gary. You have Quay Walker. You look at the secondary. Xavier McKinney was a good offseason acquisition for them a year ago. Let me ask you this. If they got T.J. Watt, NFC North, where would you place them? You got the Lions, you got the Packers, you got the Bears, and the Vikings. Where would you place them in the NFC North?
I'd probably say second behind the Lions.
So you go Lions, Packers,
Vikings, Bears.
Vikings, Bears. Okay. So Stewie said Seattle, and Nico ended up going with the Packers. I can make the case for the Packers. The Seahawks, I still don't think that would make them a contender because I just don't trust Sam Darnold, if I'm just being honest. The Eagles don't need him. So then I'm between the Commanders and the Lions. You know what? I could just as easily argue it's the Commanders. And I almost want to say the Commanders here. And then think about some of the big names, even though they're older, that they brought in this year. With Laramie Tunsil, Deebo Samuel, who everyone's calling, by the way, Deebo Samuel, fat on social media. Terrell Owens did so. Brandon Graham did so. I thought this was just AI. Everyone's going after Deebo. They think he's a little extra pudgy. So a lot of people going after him. But you know what? The Commanders are just in the NFC Championship game. I look at the Lions. It's a major year for the Lions. And 2 years ago, they're in the NFC Championship game. This year, they got upset by the Commanders after having the bye and home field advantage running through Detroit. You got Hutchinson coming back off the injury. If you got Hutch in addition with T.J. Watt, oh my God. With the names that they have on that offense, now Jared Goff has to make a big throw in a big situation. Jared Goff's been a good quarterback, but he's not great. The Lions, they got a 2 to 3 year run here. And we've seen the last 2 years them get close. Now they got to get top of the mountain. I'll make the case for the Detroit Lions right there. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Come on back. Is LeBron James setting up his departure in L.A.? And if so, when will that go down? We'll get to that on the other side. Also coming up in about 25 minutes from now, former NFL general manager Doug Whaley. We'll try to ask him what the return would be if the Steelers do in fact say that they want to part with T.J. Watt and they'll entertain trading him. This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at WesleyFinancialGroup.com. So yesterday we discussed a lot about this LeBron James reporting from over the weekend where he opted into the $52.6 million player option, but then his agent Rich Paul gave the quote to Shams Charania that LeBron wants to compete for a championship. He knows the Lakers are building for the future. He understands that, but he values a realistic chance of winning it all. We are very appreciative of the partnership that we've had for 8 years with Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka and consider the Lakers as a critical part of his career. So since then, a lot of potential trade speculation has been linked to LeBron James. I don't think LeBron is getting traded this offseason. Could maybe this get revisited at the trade deadline? Possibly. But that salary is so large at $52.6 million. I know you could always find a way, but it almost seems unmovable. So what LeBron James did by guaranteeing him to opt into this player option is that he'll be a free agent at the end of this season. That's what LeBron James did. But LeBron James could have become a free agent this offseason if he really wanted to get out of L.A. And that's the part to me, Stu, where, and you're a Lakers fan, but it's tough for me to still wrap my head around it, where I don't know what LeBron wants when it comes to his future. Because I don't think he's not going to be on the Lakers for this season. You know, maybe I'm sure because LeBron loves the drama, these rumors will pop back up at the trade deadline if things aren't going well in L.A. And I'm sure that they'll end up getting DeAndre Ayton at this point with all the way they've gone down. I don't want to say it feels inevitable, but it feels like there's a strong likelihood that they'll get DeAndre Ayton. But even if they have DeAndre Ayton with Luka Doncic, am I sitting there saying that they're better than the Oklahoma City Thunder? No. Am I sitting there saying they're better than the Houston Rockets? No. I'll even go as far to say I don't think they're better than the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets with the roster they just had this year, without basically a coach, even though their interim coach is not going to be their full-time coach, but you got rid of the coach of the GM 3 games before the postseason started. Nikola Jokic is that great that he took the eventual NBA champions to 7 games. So those 3 teams are better right now, and the Rockets got better this offseason, and the Nuggets also got better this offseason. So the way that I look at this right now, I don't know what LeBron wants. And if he truly wanted to leave L.A., he could have done so last offseason. He could have done so this offseason. And he threw out this quote, basically, by Rich Paul, where it kind of gives you an ominous feel about him staying in L.A. But every chance he has an opportunity to leave, he stays. So, Stu, I'm really at loss for words here with what LeBron James is doing. And I think this is just LeBron wanting to be in the news, and LeBron wanted the attention directed his way, and he's getting that right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess the one thing I'll say is, with some of the reporting that the Lakers are trying to hold off until 2027, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, what are you gonna achieve the next 2 years? You're gonna kind of throw away the last year of LeBron with Luka, and then another
year. How many
years
do you think LeBron's gonna play in the league?
I think one.
You think this is it?
Maybe 2 more, but I can't see more than 2.
I think he's got to play at least 2 more.
At least. Wow.
Now that may just be 2 and that's it. I think it could potentially be 3. But if you say right now, what do you feel? I would probably say it's 2 more. He gave that, I don't know where it was. It was Instagram Live, I think, or something. And he goes, oh, Savannah wants me to retire in a year.
Yeah. We'll see.
Giselle Bundchen wanted Tom Brady to retire for years. They ended up getting a divorce. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Savannah and LeBron James. Let me be clear. But you look at LeBron. Look, let's be real. Yeah, can we just call a spade here? Is LeBron going to allow his NBA season, his final NBA season, for that not to be public that this is the last season? LeBron is going to want a retirement tour that gave birth to a retirement tour. The fact that he has not said yet this is it for him after the season, and maybe that happens in the middle of the season, but I would think it would happen before the start of the season, that my intentions are that this will be my final year with my talents being taken wherever I am in the association, blah, 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 blah. So the fact that he hasn't said this is it or made it known that this is it makes me think that he's playing at least 2 more seasons. Now, could he have a major injury and that force him to retire? Yes, I guess that's possible. So I would think 9.9 times out of 10 here, if LeBron James is going to retire in the way that he envisions it going, it's probably going to be a year-long retirement tour. So my question then becomes, and you're talking about how they're waiting for 2027 to be able to make a big move. Maybe that's 2025, 2026, 2026, 2027. Even if LeBron stays for 1 more year and finishes out his career, maybe they look at it, all right, Luka and LeBron, the pairing of them together, we're just going to roll the dice and see if that's good enough just in elite, now that's dynamic duos. Maybe that's good enough for us to go win an NBA championship. Maybe that's the way that they're looking at it, why they're going to be more passive rather than them being aggressive. But I look at this, I had a little change of heart. Yesterday I said he's definitely going to finish his career in Los Angeles. He will definitely be on the Lakers this year. I don't think, though, it's crazy. I do think it's on the table for him, and it would be very fitting for LeBron, right? Who had the most publicized free agency ever. For LeBron to take his talents one place else before his NBA career ends. And maybe do that in free agency. There's been a lot there with the Dallas Mavericks. And wouldn't that be crazy? Could there be an inevitable return to Cleveland? Like, let's say LeBron has another good year this year, and he's capable of doing what he did this upcoming season again one more time, and Cleveland is just stuck once again. Now, I think the time to go back to Cleveland would be now, because the East is wide open, especially when it's the Knicks and the Cavs, right? You're looking at teams like the Pistons and the Magic that are on the rise. Pacers, Halliburton hurt. You can forget about them now. Jason Tatum hurt, and they're losing pieces left and right. The Boston Celtics, the Bucks, Damian Lillard now off the team. So you look at the time to go there is now, but could a year from now, could LeBron say, yeah, I'll go back to Cleveland to wrap up my career? I guess it's possible. So let me ask you this one. Percentages that LeBron James is on the Los Angeles Lakers to start the season and end this season, what would that percentage be?
I would say start the season.
And end the season. Just one total package.
Oh, one total. Start and end the season, I would say 75%.
Okay. Nico?
60.
Wow, that low. 98%. I would even go 99, 99.2%. I think he's going to be there to start the season and end the season. Now, here's the question, though. What's the percentage of chance that LeBron is going to be on the Lakers for what would be the 2026-2027 NBA season?
33%.
33%. So you think it's more likely that he's going to end his career somewhere else?
Yes.
Nico?
I'm going to stay the same. I'll go 60% again. I don't think it matters that much, like, okay, this year compared to next year.
I think it's like 58. I think it's close to a coin flip, but I do lean more so. Wait, I asked it of him going somewhere else. Is that the way that I asked it for the second part? Sorry. I think it's a 58% chance that he will end his career with the Los Angeles Lakers. I do. I think it's a coin flip, and the reason why I lean more that he's going to stay is this has been out there the last few years, I feel like, and it's almost Giannis-like where we're all trying to get him out. I'm not saying we're trying to get LeBron out, but there's so much stuff there, and he keeps on staying and staying and staying in L.A. All righty, let's do this. Through what we've seen through the last day and a half, who have been, and you could also factor in other trades that have happened within like the last week or so since the NBA season ended. Who are the biggest winners and losers so far of the NBA offseason? I will start with my winner, and I'm going to go with the Houston Rockets. They didn't have to move mountains in order to get Kevin Durant. They also got Clint Capella back after a few years' absence when they traded him to the Atlanta Hawks. They signed him to a three-year, $21.5 million deal. And they also signed Dorian Finney-Smith to a four-year, $53 million deal. They were the number two team in the Western Conference last year. I think they are the biggest contender in the Western Conference this year to the Oklahoma City Thunder with the moves that they made. So my winners so far in the NBA offseason are the Houston Rockets. Nico, who's your winner?
My winner is going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Hmm.
And the reason I say that is because I know the culture is different now than maybe it was 10 years ago. But getting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander locked up, knowing that he's going to be staying around in Oklahoma City, I think is really important because we've seen so many guys leave that town before.
Yeah, he was never going to leave, though.
Yeah, but
of course he's going to take the money. I guess, thought that was surprising when he took the money today?
I wouldn't say it's surprising necessarily. I think it's just more of a sigh of relief for Thunder
fans. That's fair.
That was my thought with that one.
Okay. Stu?
Mine are the Denver Nuggets. They make that trade last night. They trade Michael Porter Jr. in his big contract. They get Cam Johnson, who is a very similar player, probably has less injury concern.
Wow. That's crazy, bro. that was Cam Johnson was the player there in that whole thing. But yeah.
That's right. I think it's a good trade. Plus, they saved the money. They used some of that money to get Jonas Valanciunas, a good backup for Jokic. So I think they're showing to Jokic that they want to build a winner around him.
Yeah, and you get Bruce Brown back as well, who was a critical part for them when they won the championship. All right, let's go to losers. I'll start with you, Stu. Who do you think is the biggest loser?
I think it's the Celtics. And we knew this was coming. We knew they're going to do some trades. Luckily for them, they haven't traded Jaylen Brown. I don't think they will. But you lose a guy like Porzingis. You lose a guy like Holiday. Even Cornette going to the Spurs. Looks like Horford's going to leave. I know it's going to be kind of a punt year for them with Tatum hurt. But it's still hard. Like, it's still going to be very hard for them, I think, even the following season to build that cast around him and Brown. I just don't see them doing it that quickly.
Nico?
For me, it's the Bucks, and you mentioned it before that Miles Turner's a good player. He's not a great player. And I think to cause all this drama around Giannis for someone like Miles Turner, like, it's not like you got Kevin Durant.
But Giannis wanted him. Sean said Giannis wanted him. I understand that he's not a great player. I was the one that even said it, like you just said. But Dame Lillard was done in Milwaukee anyway. Giannis wanted Miles Turner. It doesn't make them a championship contender, but don't you do what Giannis wants?
I mean, I guess, yeah, but it just seems weird now that we're hearing all these different rumors about how he's not happy.
Well, let me let you know a little secret. As someone that once led a movement where I was thanked by the Milwaukee Bucks for sign that Supermac, keep the Greek freak, this stuff with Giannis has been going on since 2020. That's what's been happening. All righty, I'm going to give you mine. It's the Lakers. Now, if they get DeAndre in, it changes things, but you got this LeBron stuff, and they've done nothing. They have literally done nothing, the Los Angeles. Have they made one move still?
Yes, they signed a forward from the Kings, whose name is escaping me now, because I honestly had never heard of him before.
Wonderful move, let me tell you that. Peter Bellendier on Twitter says, Zach, doesn't LeBron have another kid that will be draft eligible soon? Yes. I can't tell you that I am well-versed on Bryce James, but I know that he's going to Arizona and he could be eligible for the NBA draft after this year. And even if he's not good, it doesn't matter because then LeBron can get him on the team that he's on. So maybe that you do have that be the final season. If LeBron is in LA, it's with Bryce James, Bronny James, or if LeBron goes somewhere else, he goes and gets Bronny to the other team and Bryce James to that team as well. Doug Whaley going to join us next. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. What could TJ Watt get traded for if, in fact, the Pittsburgh Steelers say, hey, we're ready to move on from you? We'll delve into those questions and get a bunch of NFL questions answered when we come on back.